finance and economics.
Free exchange. Great divide. Should central bankers argue in public?
Jerome Powell's tenure as chairman of the Federal Reserve has been admirably sure-footed. But on July 31st, he may have stumbled when he announced that interest rates would remain at 5.25% to 5.5%. This was soon followed by unexpectedly weak employment data. Markets around the world then plunged as investors worried that the Fed had fallen behind the curve. Bank of England, or BOE, policymakers were meanwhile sitting as comfortably as could be expected, given the circumstances. On August 1st, they had voted to cut rates from 5.25% to 5%. What at first glance may appear a straightforward story of better judgment, in fact reveals deeper truths about how monetary policy is set. The BOE's decision was made by the barest of margins. Five dovish members outvoted four more hawkish colleagues who wanted to hold firm. The Fed, which puts far more value on consensus, would be unlikely to see such a split. In many other countries, it would be impossible. Monetary policymakers debate behind closed doors and then present a united front in public. Economists now broadly agree on how a central bank ought to operate. It should be independent, rather than following the whims of politicians. It should focus on controlling inflation over the medium term. And it should be staffed by judicious technocrats who have been appointed on merit. Yet one question remains unanswered. How exactly should central banks set monetary policy? This is not about whether a hawkish or dovish approach is superior, but about the mechanics of decision-making, a matter on which there remains remarkably wide variation. Until 2019, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, normally a leader when it comes to monetary policy innovation, took an extreme approach. Its governor simply set rates by himself. New Zealand's move to a committee system was wise, since such a structure mitigates against the risk that the person in office might not be up to the job. In the 2000s, researchers conducted experiments with economics students at the London School of Economics, Princeton University, and the University of California. These used a simple computer-run economic model, which was subjected to random shocks. Students had to respond by moving interest rates and were scored on how well they kept unemployment at 5% and inflation at 2% over the course of 20 financial quarters. In every case, committees outperformed individuals. Indeed, a large body of empirical work suggests that well-run committees help smooth extreme perspectives, drive out poor judgment, and provide more insulation from both political and personal pressure. Beyond the relatively straightforward question of whether interest rates should be set by an individual or a group, the divide in the monetary policy world is between an individualistic approach to committees, as found in Britain and the Nordic countries, and collegiate committees, as at the European Central Bank. In the individualistic model, policymakers express their own views, argue for a desired policy position, and then vote for the action they prefer, with the votes later published. Members can and do disagree in public. By contrast, in a collegial system, the approach is to debate the options and then come to a collective decision, which all members stand behind. At the ECB, the aim is to achieve consensus and individual voting records are not publicised. The Fed is something of a hybrid. Members of the Federal Open Market Committee, or FOMC, can go their own way and individual voting records are published. At the same time, the institution places a high value on collegiality. Alan Blinder, an economist at Princeton and former FOMC member, has argued that under Alan Greenspan, the Fed's chairman from 1987 to 2006, the FOMC was an autocratically collegial system in which the chairman dictated the consensus and other members were expected to fall in line. A split vote, Mr. Greenspan once lectured colleagues, would risk serious problems for this organization. Under Ben Bernanke, Janet Yellen, and Mr. Powell, the Fed has been less dominated by one individual. The FOMC is made up of the seven permanent Fed governors, together with the president of the New York Fed and four of the other 11 regional Fed presidents on a rotating basis. No governor has dissented on a policy decision since 2005, but presidents are more willing to go against the grain. Which system is best? The question is a bit like asking if an automatic or manual car is superior. It depends on what you're after. Individualistic committees often move faster. It is easier to corral five votes among the nine members of the BOE's Monetary Policy Committee to change policy than it is to generate a near consensus at the ECB or the Fed. The BOE was one of the earliest rich country central banks to begin tightening policy in 2021 and among the first to begin cutting this year. Such a system also defends against the danger of groupthink. However, this nimbleness comes at a cost. Although the need for consensus may slow down decision-making, it also allows policymakers to speak with a clear voice to financial markets and avoids the cacophony of conflicting signals with which BOE watchers are all too familiar. When it comes to monetary policy, the expected path of interest rates can be just as important a tool as the level of rates now. The ability to send markets a single message is extremely useful. Most of the time, influence over interest rate expectations is more valuable than nimbleness, but not always. Imagine a situation in which there are signs the labour market is weakening, inflation is stubbornly above target, and markets are in turmoil. At such an inflection point, when a change in the monetary policy regime is required, it might be better to be more open about disagreement. For once, it is better to be British than American.